Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yana. This is my favorite part of the program, where we transition out of the lies that are religion and into the truth that comes from Yahweh. I did promise, though, not recognizing that our first hour had flown by so quickly, that I would at least address the statement that the Pope made, where he said that that the consequence of fundamentalist religion had left so many dead, and that it was lethal. As I was bolstering the argument for the claim that Peter had made of being abused by the Roman Catholic Church in Canada, I came upon a very lengthy and effective argument that was presented on Wiki, and it described the abuse scandal that I read a synopsis of yesterday that is taking place in Australia, perpetrated by the Roman Catholic Church. And there I learned that this investigation that had been launched by the Parliament of the Victorian state of Australia was conducted because of 40 suicides. 40 young men and women took their lives as a result of the torment of having been abused by Roman Catholic clerics. Fundamentalist religion is deadly. That said, let's turn to Yahweh. Today is the second of 7 + 1 days that are associated with our celebration of Sukkah. Sukkah means shelters. In Hebrew, this shelter is an enlightened home. It's a home of brilliant light. It's a place where family are sheltered, where they're protected, where they are and are able to grow, be nourished, and be loved. So Sukkah is all about returning to God's home, about entering His home and living with Him. Sukkah is specifically about camping out, about pitching our tent in God's proximity, of going on a camping trip, if you will, with the universe being the destination and Yahweh Himself being our guide. Yesterday, we returned to Yah's invitation on Yom Kippurim, because when one understands Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, and God inviting us to come into His presence, then we not only understand the purpose of Sukkah, but we know how to get there. It's the key that unlocks the door to God's home. The last statement that God made on Sukkah is worth repeating. On Yom Kippurim is worth repeating. So I'm going to begin there, and then we're going to talk about what specifically happens on Yom Kippurim that enables us 5 days later to live in paradise again, return to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden with the very God who created the universe and authored life living in our midst. It reads, "This is an eternal and everlasting olam, perpetual and enduring, never ending, clearly communicated prescription for living. This is olam chuka." Chuka is that which is inscribed, and an instruction which is cut into stone that establishes us in a relationship. Throughout all time and all generations, door for all people, everywhere. In all of your assemblies and dwelling places, Moshab, wherever you live, in every household, settlement, and location. God has said that this invitation to reconcile the covenant relationship with Him and to come into His presence is for all people and for all time, which means that you have no excuse to ignore it, to reject the invitation on some misguided religious notion that God's Torah instructions have been nullified. It is for you a time to rest and reflect, Shabbat. A Shabbaton observance, a celebration of the promise associated with the seventh day. And so your soul should respond to this invitation to be called out. You should answer the call, Ana. During the ninth of the month, in the evening, from sundown until sunset, you should consistently observe, examine, consider, and focus upon Shamar, your Shabbat. So, Yahweh is concluding his instruction regarding Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliation, by telling us not once, not twice, but three times that this invitation concludes with Shabbat, that this leads to a Sabbath. And that if you answer this invitation, you too will experience a perpetual Shabbat, a perpetual time of promise and reflection. Three times. And yet what do religious Christians do? They ignore all of that. And they go worship a God who doesn't even want to be worshipped, a God whose name they don't even know, on Sunday, discarding his invitation to reconcile our relationship with him. There's also a note here that is really important for us to understand, particularly as it relates to a different day, Pesach, that the celebration of Yah's called out invitations to meet with him, his Mikra, begin during the evening at sundown and continue through sundown of the following day. The reason that's important is because the only way that Yahusha could be both the Passover lamb and celebrate the Passover meal as an example for us to follow was for Passover to begin on that year on a Thursday night, and it continued through all day Friday. Therefore, on Thursday night of the year 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, he was able to celebrate and observe the Passover meal with his disciples, explaining not only its relevance, but his participation in Passover, and he could still become the Passover lamb the following day before the sun set. These things are all laid out for us to observe. Shamar. Perhaps as important as any word in the whole Hebrew lexicon. Shamar is often corrupted to be keep, to mean keep. But that's not what the word means. It means to observe, to pay attention, to focus on that which can be seen, to read, to investigate, to consider what you have witnessed. Very few things are more important than Shamar. In this case, it's pay attention to your Shabbat. The Sabbath was created for us. The Sabbath is based upon Shabbat. The Hebrew basis of the word speaks of a promise, an oath. It is God's promise. It is the seventh day. It is presented as 6 days leading to the seventh day. It's God's formula. Six, the number of man who is created on the sixth day, plus God who is one, leads to the promise to perfect us. It leads to God's version of perfection, what God wants the most, which is for us to live with him. Now, on this day, on Yom Kippurim, in a year 6000 Yah, exactly 40 Yobel from the time that he fulfilled the first four, Moed Mikre. This is what's going to happen. And it's one of the most misquoted and misunderstood passages in the whole of Scripture. I'm going to move from the book of Korah and the heart of the Torah to the heart of the prophets. This to Yirmiyahu. You'll know it as Jeremiah. It means Yahweh uplifts. Behold, he says, pay attention. Days are coming, prophetically declares Yahweh, when I will actually cut relationally with the household and family of Yisrael. Yisrael speaks of those individuals who engage and endure with God. Yisrael. It's a compound of individuals who engage and endure with El God. And he's speaking of a household, a family. The covenant, Bereth, is based upon Be'eth, the Hebrew word for household and family. When they Be'eth Yisrael, and on behalf of the household and family, the Be'eth of Yahudah. So this is written to those individuals who engage and endure with God, the Be'eth Yisrael, and the Be'eth Yahudah, the family of those who relate to and are related to Yah. A renewing, restoring, and repairing Kadash, family-oriented covenant relationship. So let me read that all the way through. But before I do, let me just speak one moment about Kadash. Kadash is the Hebrew word to meaning to restore, to renew, to repair, to reaffirm. It's the Hebrew word is used to designate a month in its noun state. This time it was used as an adjective, but it's based on the verb form kadash, which means to repair, to restore, to renew, to reaffirm. The reason it's the Hebrew word also for month is that months were lunar months back in the day before mechanization. It was the universal timekeeper, if you will. And the light on the moon's surface, the reflected light on the moon's surface, starts with none and then renews, gradually growing over time. That was the beginning, or the restoring or renewing of the light on the moon, therefore beginning a new month. We'll return to this statement from Yahweh found in Yirmiyahu 31 after the break, when we consider what God said was going to happen on this day, 5 days before Sukkah. To Shattering Mist. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion if you would like by calling 877-300-7645. Scott and I were having a lively discussion during the break about Sukkah being the last invitation to meet with God of the year. It's the last because it is the conclusion. It is unique among the seven. In everything that God does, it's all about 6 + 1 = 7. There's always one of the events that is different than the other six, although they're all related. So there's six that in this particular case of the Moed Mikre, of these invitations to be called out and meet with God, that provide the path to the seventh. And so the unique one among the seven is Sukkah, where we actually come into God's presence and celebrate the restoration of our relationship. And this is therefore the last and seventh Moed Mikre of the year. The next celebration will be next year's observance of Pesach, Passover, which occurs on the 14th day of the first month of the scriptural calendar. And God's timing there is associated with the Kadash, or the renewing or restoring of the light on the moon, that is closest to the time that we find barley beginning to form a green kernel which is the first grain to blossom of the year in Israel, and it's also associated with the flowering of the blue flower that is found on the flax plant. And we're told these things that to identify the timing of Pesach and when to celebrate it during the Exodus. So God is very specific about when his year begins. And he uses this terminology because it was the best way prior to mechanization to have a universal timepiece that would serve as a calendar. And both of the symbols are metaphors. In the case of barley, the most ubiquitous metaphor in the scripture for saved souls is the kernel of barley grain. And even the blue flower of the flax is symbolic. Flax is the source of linen, which is the pure garment that God says we are adorned in as we are adopted into his family. And beautiful white garment that makes us look perfect before God. And second, the blue flower is symbolic of God's home in the spiritual realm in heaven, which is where we will camp out with him. Now, bringing us back to this statement, I was going to share with you the conclusion of the idea of Kadash. Kadash, which is the word I translated renewing, restoring, repairing, and reaffirming, can on occasion be translated new, as in a new family-oriented covenant relationship. But in the vast preponderance of time, if you look up every use of Kadash in Yah's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it is more accurately translated renewing or restoring, repairing or reaffirming, just as it is here. And it speaks specifically, the verb speaks specifically of these things. So if you use your lexicon and you look up Kadash, you will first see, well, it means new. And then if you're using a lexicon that points you to the root of the word, which is usually the verb form, almost always the verb form, it will tell you, well, the verb form means renewing, restoring, repairing, reaffirming. And it is the verbs that define the nouns and adjectives. God does not have a new and different covenant. He is simply going to restore the existing covenant. And covenant, as I shared earlier, is written Bereth, which is based upon the word that we read twice in this paragraph, Beeth, which is household and family. So let me read this to you again. Behold, pay attention, henna, days, yomim, are coming, bo, prophetically declares Naum, Yahweh, when I will actually cut, I will actually establish wa karat, relationally, eth, with the household of and family, the bereth of Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God, and on behalf of wa eth, the household and family, Beeth of Yehuda, meaning those who relate to and are related to Yahweh. A restoring, renewing, and repairing reaffirmation of the family-oriented covenant relationship, Kadash Beeth. It will not be. Now, this is interesting. And this is where Christians always want to read, but they do not want to read what came before it or what came after it, because it will imply that this affirmation of the covenant won't be like the existing affirmation of the covenant found in the Torah. But wait one moment and we'll learn the truth. I'm your host, Yana. As always, you can participate in this discussion by calling 877-376-45. So here, Yahweh has said that a time is coming when he is going to establish, he's going to cut relationally with the household of Yisrael and with the household of Yehuda, a renewing, restoring, and repairing family-oriented covenant relationship. Now, Christians will tell you that this is prophetic of their New Testament, of their new covenant, of their religion. But the problem, of course, with that is that this is being established with Yisrael and Yehudim, not with Christian Goyim. There are very, very, very few Christians today that are Yehudim or that would identify themselves as being associated with Yisrael. As a matter of fact, the founder of the Christian religion, Paul, is vehemently opposed to Yehuda and Yehudim, the plural of Yehuda, Jews. And so there is no way to construe this affirmation of the covenant with the Christian Gentile church. But Christians are nonetheless not dissuaded because they simply ignore the first part of that and they start quoting the statement from a new covenant, mistranslating the testimony and truncating it because of what follows. And they will cite what follows, but not what follows that. God says, it will not be exactly the same, lo-ka, as the covenant which relationally I established with their fathers in the day when, firmly grasping me in their hand, I led them out from the realm of the crucible of Egypt, which relationally they broke, disassociating themselves from my family covenant relationship, though I was married to them, prophetically declares Yahweh. Now, once again, to justify their religion, Christians will cite the first part of that, misquoting God, taking him out of context, and ignoring all of the rest. Because, you see, by firmly grasping Yahweh by the hand, God was able to lead Yisrael and Yehudim out of the crucible of Egypt, Mitzrayim, which serves as a metaphor for religious, political, economic, and military oppression. And the moment you see God himself, long before the presence of the misnomer Jesus Christ appearing, God led his children, his people, away from religion, away from politics. By the hand, they reached up to him, and he led them from these things. He also says that the Yehudim disassociated themselves from the covenant. Guess who else has done that? Every Christian, Muslim, Hindu, and socialist, secular humanist in the world. God speaks of his covenant as being like a marriage, exclusive, loving, further defining the nature of this covenant. All right, now let's find out, by actually listening to God, what will keep this reaffirmation and restoration and renewal of the covenant, what will cause it to be not exactly the same as the existing covenant? Let's listen. Indeed, with this familial covenant relationship, ki ha zoth bereth, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, I will cut in the future, karat, I will create and establish through separation. By the way, when I say I will cut, I'm assuming that because of the context, God is saying that this is a prophetic declaration. Nahum, he told us twice that this was information about the future. So I have to assume, therefore, on solid grounds, that this is being revealed in what we would consider future tense. In Hebrew, there is no such thing as a past, present, or future tense. In Hebrew, every verb is. Truth is. Yahweh is. His Torah is. There is no sense of was or will be other than with the concept of is. All of those things coexist, just like a photon of light. Time on a photon of light exists. the past, present, and future, are all simultaneous on a photon of light, which is why God uses light to describe his nature. So, I render this in the future tense, just because God told us twice that this was a prophetic declaration. So indeed, with this familial covenant relationship, which relationally and beneficially I will cut with the house of Yisrael, reminding us who will be the participants on this day, after those days, prophetically declares a third issuance of the statement that tells us that this is God's prediction, which in God's case are really not predictions, but future history. He's already witnessed this. Prophetically declares Yahweh, God, for the second time, has given us his name. I will actually give. Now, this is what's going to make it different. I will actually give my Torah, completely providing and producing my teaching and instruction. Netan, which is the Hebrew word for bestow and to give, eth Torah, which is the Hebrew word for teaching, instructions, guidance, and direction. I will actually give my Torah, completely providing and producing my teaching and instruction within their inner nature, Bakreb. And upon their heart, I will actually write it, Ketab. And I shall exist as, I will always be, without interruption or exception, be their God. And for them, and they shall always be, for me, family. Now we have Larry on the line, and we're going to have him share his thoughts, particularly on the Hebrew concept of Kodesh. But understanding this statement from God completely destroys the myth of a Christian New Testament. It completely undermines the basic premise of the religion of Christianity. And it tells us something extraordinarily profound, not only about the Torah, but about our relationship with God past this mortal existence and what it's going to be like.
I got to tell you, I've got a profound statement for you here. Okay. Religious copy edits are always used to buttress religious points of view.
Yes, they are.
And, like, here's an example. I can take Kadesh, and I know it means repaired and restored, and then you can make it new if you feel like it. But then we have all kinds of verses that have to be thrown out. And here's a very important one. Now, this is in Zechariah 14:1. Mm-hmm. Behold, Yahweh's day of return and restoration is coming. Wow.
Yeah.
What is he restoring? Well, he couldn't be restoring something new.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
We have a little problem here. Then we go over to Yashayahu. Without money or cost, listen to me carefully, he says. Incline your ear. Come to me. Speak. Speak to me. Listen so that you may live, and I will be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship with you. So if he made a covenant, we know it's everlasting because his covenants are everlasting. He's not a political actor out there saying one thing one day and then changing his mind the next. The point is you have to rewrite so much of the rest of the text to fit New Testament.
Yeah. Yeah, your comment, your first citation, that when he returns, he will reestablish and restore his covenant, is a perfect match for his statement here in Yirmiyahu. You found that in Zechariah, which means to remember Yah. And it's in that context that God actually says that when he returns, Yehudim and in Yisrael will look upon him whom they have pierced, and they will recognize him for the first time.
And so
by the very fact that that he says that he will reaffirm his covenant at that time, also tells you that there can't be a new one because you don't renew that which is new.
Yeah, you can't restore something. And by the way,
that you've already made new.
Right. In Zechariah, what it says, so they will look at me upon me, whom by association Asher they pierced, Dekor,
yeah,
mourning as one wails for an only begotten son, grieving bitterly over him. As one that suffers anguish over a firstborn. Now, that's pretty clear to me who he's talking to.
Yeah.
And, you know, if any of us care to become family, you know, he tells us how to do that. And that's the object here, isn't it? To join the family, to join the family covenant.
Yeah.
You know, I had Terry and I were having a debate with a fellow today that was claiming that Yahweh is omnipotent. He's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And so what's he do? He pulls out the King James Version book, named after the sun goddess Biblio, and starts the his eyes are on the ways of men. He sees their every step.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's deal with one thing and then
I'm
another.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just translations.
Right. Yeah.
You know, are used to mislead people. We know it. We see it. Now that we have the actual text and can look at it, we know we were all lied to. And that's what we need to get. We were all lied to. And
yeah, we were.
I'll stop right there.
Yeah, we were. There were some very profound statements in the Zechariah quote that relate to this day. As a matter of fact, it was the next place I was going in Scripture. God speaks of himself returning. Yahweh is speaking in first person, and he refers to himself as the one whom they had pierced, which means that Yahusha is nothing more or less than a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. And so the moment you understand the context of that statement and who is making it and what he said happened to him, you understand who Yahusha actually is. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Thank you, Larry, for your call. I want to return to this this profound statement from Yahweh, because if you get this, most everything will make sense to you. And during a discussion during the break, I asked Scott a pretty direct question, because this says that the difference between the existing covenant and the reaffirmation of the covenant when Yahweh returns is going to be this one thing, which is that God's going to take his Torah and write it inside of us, going to give us a complete and perfect copy of the Torah, his teaching. And so I asked Scott during the break, why do you suppose that God hasn't already done that?
Free will.
That was the answer you gave, and it is just still your answer?
Still my answer.
It's the right answer. Free will. If God wrote his Torah inside of us, if he gave us a perfect copy of the Torah, then there could be no way to corrupt it. You couldn't have a bogus Bible translation. You couldn't have a religion like Christianity. You couldn't have a religion like Judaism. Islam could not exist. You could not be beguiled. You could not be misled. The Torah is God's antidote to religion. It is God's antidote to politics. It's God's remedy for being misled. If you had a perfect copy of the Torah written inside of you, God's teaching, his direction, his guidance, no one could mislead you. God would be known by all. He would be understood by all. The means to engage in the covenant relationship would be known by all, understood by all. God would put himself in a position where it would be impossible to reject him. And if you put people in a position where God cannot be ignored and where he cannot be misunderstood, then you have eliminated free will. And the moment you eliminate free will, then there is no purpose for creation. There's no purpose for our lives. Because our lives exist on the promise that if we avail ourselves of the opportunity to come to know Yahweh and come to understand the covenant that he is offering us, that if we respond to him and say, that's what we want, we know what it is that he's offering and we embrace it, then we become part of his family and he enjoys being our dad. That's the reason the universe exists. The moment God writes the Torah inside of us, free will as we know it, the choice to either relate to God or reject him goes away. Now, why is it that in a date on our future, when God returns, because Larry was kind enough to read this passage that affirms that this Torah is going to be renewed when he returns, why is it then that he can write his Torah inside of us? What's different then?
You've already made your choice. You've had all
everybody,
the free will.
Everybody has already made their choice. Everybody who remains and who survives his return will have already made the choice. Those who did not make the choice to embrace his covenant will be destroyed upon his return. When he returns, he's not coming back in a completely undiminished form. He's coming back looking as brilliant as the stars. And that energy will instantly incinerate to those who came to oppose him, who still oppose him, who do not know him. And it is those who have come to embrace the terms and conditions of his covenant that on that day they will have already made their choice, and now God can give us the greatest gift of all. He can write his Torah teaching inside of us. Now, here's what's interesting. While we are on earth, and this is the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah, year 6,000 to year 7,000, while we are on earth, we can use the Torah to be administrators over his millennial kingdom. The existing Torah, just as it's written. But during this time, which is the beginning of our eternity, those of us who have embraced the covenant will be empowered as spiritual beings to go explore the universe. Now, since we'll be able to travel in time, since we will be infinitely more powerful than we are now, since we'll be operating in a seven-dimensional construct and can maneuver in it, I don't know about you, but I know for me, I would like some instruction as to how to go off and explore the universe without goofing stuff up. You know, if we're not supposed to go and explore a black hole, then, you know, I'd like some instruction from God, say, don't go near one of those. And if God says, hey, you know, even though you're now a spiritual being and therefore you're akin to light, there are some times where taking on a physical presence could be an advantage. And here's how you transition from one to the other so that you can enjoy sitting around a campfire, having a lively chat, singing some wonderful songs, sharing a good meal. I am Yada, speaking for Yahweh. This is Shattering Myths.
Hey, this is Steve Schultz, and you've been hearing top radio personalities talk about longevity and how people are getting healthy and making an income at home. You see, I've built a seven-figure income.